This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Hello, everybody. This is Basma Farhat with my co-host, John Neal, and our board operator, Carrie Minaj. We are here on the People Speak Radio. The People Speak is a radio program that is coming through to you on Paltalk. You can attend this virtual auditorium by going to www.paltalk.com and downloading and installing the software. Create a nick and come on in and interact with our guests. We're also broadcasting over CWRN, and you can go to that on www.cosmicwavesradio.com and Skypecast. That's where we're going. We're going all over the place, guys.
Yes, we are.
This is a very interesting evening. Our guest tonight, Medea Benjamin, is with us, sorta, kinda. And also joining us this evening is Ann Wright. Ann is works alongside Medea Benjamin with Code Pink. Medea Benjamin was nominated for a Nobel Peace Prize a year ago. Medea was dragged out of the Fleet Center today.
Yes, she was.
Protest.
Yes, she was. Go ahead, Vic. Go ahead, Vixie.
Yeah, and you know, so what's happening now is on the ground, the Code Pink group, along with all of the activists, are currently in intensive meetings. A lot is happening on the ground. This kind of thing is unfolding as we speak. So I want you to know that we are really honored to have Ann fill in for the first part of the show, and Medea is going to be joining us a little bit later.
And someone else is probably going to join us too, I think, Basma, as well. I think Medea said two people, maybe. So, yes, it's very exciting. We are the Paltalk community and the people on Cosmic Waves Radio Network and the Skypecast are currently involved in this meeting as well. There's a lot of things that are going on, and we're going to jump into those at speed. We do have to break in just a couple of seconds for a public service announcement, and then we'll come right back with Ann Wright and others et al. And anything else, Basima? You ready to roll?
Not at all. Take it away, Carrie.
The People Speak Radio Show is being broadcast over a shoutcast stream at CosmicWavesRadio.com. That's CosmicWavesRadio, one word, .com. It is also being broadcast in an interactive audio chat room at Paltalk, www.paltalk.com.
Alfonso Palais works two jobs to support his family. He also pays high rent in a neighborhood plagued with drugs and crime. The family needed to move to a safer place, so they applied for a Habitat for Humanity house. Now Habitat for Humanity is helping the Palais family build a simple, decent, and safe home. A home they'll buy with a no-profit and zero-interest mortgage. Habitat for Humanity. Building homes, changing lives. Support the work in your community. Visit Habitat.org.
This is Colonel Ann Wright. I resigned from the State Department in protest over the war in Iraq the day the war began. I had served in the State Department for 16 years and for 29 years in the U.S. Army and Army Reserves. The war in Iraq was a war of choice, not a necessity for our national defense. The Bush administration now bombs countries rather than speaking to them. We in the Congress were lied to, and we need an investigation of those lies. Please ask your Congress member to impeach George Bush and Dick Cheney for the lies they have told and the dangerous situation they have placed our country in.
Sponsored by AfterDowningStreet.org.
Thank you very much, everybody. Welcome. Welcome to the People Speak radio show. Our guests tonight, Medea Benjamin and Ann Wright, work together with Code Pink and the Global Exchange Organization in order to create and help facilitate educate and teach people how to be peaceful. Wasn't very peaceful in the Fleet Center today, was it? And Anne, could you please introduce yourself and tell us exactly what you do with Code Pink and how you came to this organization?
Yeah, Anne, and also could you give us a condensed version of what happened today? Fill us in, give us a little quick chronological up to the point where you are right now, if you would, because I'm very curious.
Super. I surely will, and it's a pleasure to be with you all tonight. It's a pleasure to be with you all tonight. I am a 29-year U.S. Army veteran. I retired as a colonel from the Army Reserves, and I also was a 16-year veteran of the U.S. Diplomatic Corps, and I resigned in opposition to the war in Iraq back in March of 2003. And since then, I've been adding my voice to those of many, many others, but my professional background of being both a military officer and a foreign service officer to say that this war in Iraq is an illegal war, a war of aggression. So during this last 3 years, since I've been resigned from the U.S. government, I have joined with lots of different groups to work on trying to get this war ended. And Code Pink is one of the great organizations, a new organization that hasn't been in existence very long, but it's proven to be a very dynamic organization. I also work with Veterans for Peace. I am a supporter of the Iraq Vets Against War and also of Military Families Speak Out. To give you a little lead-in on what happened today, yesterday we have been over with the Iraqi embassy delivering letters to the Iraqi ambassador to request that he pass on our request that we meet on behalf of the Stop the War community. We meet with the Prime Minister of Iraq, who has arrived in Washington to speak with the Bush administration. And we respectfully requested a meeting with the Prime Minister so he would hear some of the voices that represent 70% of the people of America who say the U.S. military needs to leave Iraq, and also representing over 80% of the Iraqi people that say the American forces need to leave Iraq. So we had presented this request for a meeting to the ambassador. We were at the Iraqi embassy yesterday virtually all day long waiting for a reply. The Iraqi ambassador who had originally told us that that we would have a meeting, but at least he would get back with us, did not get back with us. And so we, in the late afternoon and early evening, we were at the Iraqi embassy to remind the ambassador that we needed an answer, and we, you know, respectfully requested just a short meeting with the prime minister. We never got the meeting, and then this morning the prime minister was speaking to a joint session of Congress at the U.S. Capitol. So it was at the U.S. Capitol where Medea Benjamin was able to receive one ticket to go into the joint session of Congress. And while she was in the joint session, she stood up to say to the president, to the prime minister, that we need to have the U.S. troops out of Iraq. And she had to, she can fill you in on all of the details of what she said. It wasn't very long because the Capitol Police were with her very, very quickly and escorted her out and arrested her. And so she had spent all afternoon in the processing system of the city of Washington jails. First the little jail that the Capitol Police have, and then over to the main jail in Washington.
Well, you know,
so she's standing up.
Yeah. We got a lot of conflicting reports on this, trying to gather information when we found out of the arrest. One, that Nouri el-Maliki actually called Medea Benjamin on her cell phone. Is there any validity to that statement? And two, that originally that Medea had not been arrested, and that that she was just dragged out of the Fleet Center and escorted out.
Yeah. Well, it was the U.S. Capitol, not the Fleet Center. The U.S. Capitol in Washington, D.C. And she received a phone call from the ambassador, the Iraqi ambassador to the U.S. yesterday afternoon, which the request was, if you all will stop sitting in front of the Iraqi embassy and move out of the way so the guests to the reception that was being held last night can get in, then I will call you back and I will, I'll call you back. Well, he never called back. And they moved out from in front of the embassy and, but they never received another call back from the ambassador. But she has not spoken with the prime minister. And it was, she was arrested as she was taken out of the U.S. Capitol at the joint session of the Congress.
Can I ask you, was Cindy Sheehan also in the area at the time?
Yes, Cindy is here with us. She came in a couple of days ago and was with us in front of the Iraqi embassy and was not one of, Medea was the only one who had a ticket to go in. Cindy has already had her experiences with the U.S. Capitol when she was arrested for wearing a T-shirt in the State of the Union message back in January of this year. So she's already had her her time with Capitol Police in the joint session of a Congress. So Medea received one of the tickets from a congressman and went in, and when she felt it was appropriate that she stand to remind the prime minister that the people of the United States, 70% of them over that, say that U.S. troops need to come out of Iraq. So on behalf of the people of America, she stood up and spoke. And
what
sometimes
general,
get arrested for it.
What was the general consensus to Nouri al-Maliki's speech today before Congress?
Well, I think he is pretty well, you know, he's kind of moving with the Bush administration on a lot of things. And, we, you know, there was a 28-point plan that the Iraqis came up with, 28 points that it took them a long time to broker. And, in fact, I believe that that was one of the reasons why it took so long to form the current government of Iraq, because there was a lot of behind-the-scenes negotiations between all parties about what should be done in Iraq. But when these 28 points came to the United States, the Bush administration gutted it, and four of the proposals were taken out, one of which was a timetable for the withdrawal of U.S. troops. So the Bush administration certainly does have, I mean, while we can say that the people of Iraq elected the government, it still is not a government that is sovereign, that makes its own decisions based on the needs of its people, that it is still under great influence and pressure from the Bush administration.
And your former military, you're a colonel, retired colonel from the Army. What do you say about what is happening in Iraq?
Well, tragically, the U.S. military has been put in a tremendously difficult position by the decision of the Bush administration to commit a war crime, to invade and occupy a country that had not done anything to the United States. It is the invasion and occupation of Iraq, which was ordered, our military was ordered to do it by the Bush administration, it's a war of aggression and a war crime. And our military, some of them, or at least some of the civilian part of DOD, was, you know, of course, telling us that we'll be greeted, the U.S. forces will be greeted with flowers, that the Iraqi people want us. Well, as we've seen, the Iraqi, the one thing, at least Saddam Hussein is not in charge, but all the other things that have happened that where you, the Bush administration's decision to disband the Iraqi army, to throw out on the streets tens of thousands, if not a couple hundred thousand people who had no other livelihood except weaponry and who knew where all the weapons were and all of the ammunition and all of the explosives. And those same weapons and explosives were not seized by the U.S. forces when they came into Iraq. And many Iraqis have gone to say, we don't want you to occupy our country, and we are fighting against you. And to the U.S. military, that is it's the worst of all worlds, that you have a population that has turned against you. And our military is in a very difficult position. We have The number of people that have been killed, 2,569, I believe it is today, and tens of thousands very severely wounded, and virtually everyone that comes back from Iraq suffering some sort of emotional distress, post-traumatic stress syndrome. If not actual head concussions from virtually everyone being around the various explosions that are going on all over the country. So our military is in a very difficult predicament. It's a type of war that when you're fighting an indigenous population, it is seldom that an occupier wins it.
Well, insurgency is a real difficult process because where are the insurgents going to go? Eventually, they're not going to go anywhere, and you have to leave. And that's
and
the key. Or you have to kill.
And definitely, and the Office of Special Plans would make sure not to mention any of these scenarios that are playing out the way they are now as compared to their propaganda view back then. You know the Office of Special Plans in the Pentagon, how they... talked about being treated as liberators, the ones that talked about weapons of mass destruction, presenting it as real intelligence information, although evidence suggests that it's cherry-picked information. It's all part of a propaganda scenario that they're laying out, the Office of Special Plans. And anybody that digs deeply into the Office of Special Plans in the Pentagon will have an eye-opening experience concerning their connectivity and their methodology in creating this scene that we're in now, including Lebanon. I just wanted to put that my opinion in there because the Office of Special Plans to me are the ones that perpetuated the initial lies that Bush and others went along with, and that was an operation. We need to know who was in control of that operation. They need to be held accountable for war crimes, as you guys are mentioning. These are war crimes.
You know, Ann, John and I are very invested in our understanding of the connective process and the connective tissue. We're going to break in a minute, but when we come back, I'd like to ask you to tell us what your impression of how this is all connecting to Lebanon and Syria and Iran, if indeed you believe that there are any connective processes, that this is something that is just a planned escalation, an orchestrated escalation. But we are going to be taking a couple of public service announcements, and we'll be right back. Hopefully you can expound upon that for us. I mean, it's really wonderful that we have somebody that actually was in the military, knows how the strategies work, knows the connective process. And I think a lot of our people here would love to hear more about this. So we're going to be...
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Are you going to be...
Anne,
are you going to be able to give us a few more minutes after the break? And if so...
Sure.
If so, do you have anyone else in mind in the group that you're in that can give us maybe 15 minutes of their time this evening from the meeting to share some of their ideas? And we'll work our way up.
Surely.
I think Medea is going to be able, I think, to come in about the last quarter of the show, 15 minutes or so. And hopefully we can... If you give us a little more of your time and then maybe give us a heads up of who else is available, we can just kind of merge it all together, if that'll work for you.
Surely.
Good,
yes.
Good.
Okay, take it away, Carrie. Let's go to some public service announcements.
In America, most of us have the basics we need to survive. But there are millions of children all over the world who don't. Children who must work instead of going to school. Children who are forced to fight as child soldiers. Children who can't have an ordinary childhood because they lack health care, clean water, or good nutrition. For these children, there is UNICEF. UNICEF works in 157 countries and territories, providing children with what they need to survive and grow. To learn more, visit unicefusa.org or call 1-800-4-UNICEF.
Are you appalled that our country is spending billions on war while cutting funds for our libraries, hospitals, and schools? Are you heartsick at the suffering of the Iraqi people? Then join me, Medea Benjamin, in signing Code Pink's urgent call for peace in Iraq. Sign on today at www.womensaynotowar.org.
Thank you. Welcome back, everybody. This is the People Speak Radio Show, and tonight our guests from Code Pink and Global Exchange, Anne Wright is with us right now, She works side by side with Medea Benjamin. Medea will be with us shortly. They are currently in meetings due to the escalation of issues that have surrounded today's events, the arrest of Medea Benjamin, and the outrage of why Americans are being arrested for the constitutional right of protest.
And today, Medea had to go through a long paperwork day today with the Capitol Police, it sounds like. The reasons that they do that are still unknown to me, how they have the power to do something like that. And Anne, you are still with us. Anne is still with us. There she is.
Let me mention that, yes, the paperwork with the Capitol Police is extensive. I was arrested 2 weeks ago. I had stood up in the Senate Judiciary Committee hearing on the nomination of William Haynes, the former Department of Defense General Counsel, one of the architects of torture for the Bush administration, who has now been nominated by the Bush administration to be on the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals. For God's sake. You know, it's the Court of Appeals that hears if we ever have anything coming out of Guantanamo, it's that Court of Appeals that hears it. Here you've got the architect of torture being nominated to sit on that. So I thought that was totally outrageous. So during the confirmation hearing, there was a certain point in the hearing that I thought it was important that they hear from a military person. And so I stood up. I happened to be dressed in a Guantanamo orange jumpsuit. I thought it was appropriate to remind the senators of what this man had done, and the Guantanamo orange jumpsuit certainly it gets a lot of attention. And so I just marched straight up to the stand almost, and said on behalf of the people of the U.S. military, I think this man has done irreparable harm to our military by the policies that he pushed down the throats of our judge advocate generals, and I beg you, do not confirm this nomination. And I was able to get that out, and of course, then the
congratulations. I am applauding you. Congratulations. I love the flaming orange jumpsuit. Now that was just beautiful.
Well, you have to lay the ground. You have to put on the orange jumpsuit in order to be able to build the platform to speak from, as far as Guantanamo goes and as far as Abu Ghraib goes. Those are hellish, unmentionable places they want you to think. They don't want you to know what they're doing. And the secrecy that's going on right now as far as these operations that are being carried out, jumping over again to the special plans group, they don't want you to know exactly their methodology.
No, they don't.
So put on your orange jumpsuit and then stand in front of them and make the statements of truth. And that was a great thing to do. I'm glad you have you can facilitate yourself and actually get in the position with your experience to do that. To me, it speaks volumes of your character, and we really appreciate you sharing that with us. I hadn't heard that before.
Thank you. It didn't get much publicity.
No, well, it never does, Anne. I mean, isn't that the way of the media in the United States today, just like everything else, suppression?
Let me just mention one other thing. Tomorrow is, Washington is the place to be right now. There are so many things that the people need to be commenting on. Tomorrow is the confirmation hearing of John Bolton for the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations. You know, he's up there now on a recess appointment. He's on a recess appointment. And this is the one where they are going to either confirm or deny the nomination for permanent status there.
His status ends.
We are going to have a lot of people sitting in that confirmation hearing.
2007, the first of 2007 is when his position would be over with if he is not confirmed. Is that correct, Bolton?
I think it's probably sooner than that. I don't think a recess appointment can last a year, but maybe I'm wrong.
I think I read something to that effect. I know I saw that number, but I don't remember how specifically, you know, what part of the year it was, but 2007 was in there. Well, we're staring at the August holiday for our government, to the point to where they can run and hide in the shadows, or they can do their month-long vacation thing from us. Our servants are going to leave for the whole month of August. Like Bush, when he'll probably go back to Crawford as usual for the whole month, and
let me mention something about Crawford and first on those congressional representatives going back home on vacation. Well, that's where the people have the chance to go go talk to them. And, boy, everybody in America ought to be chewing the ear off of their representatives to say, this war has to end. If you ever don't, if you voted for this war, I'm voting you out of office. And go tell them that. Go tell them. And then on Crawford, you know, it's interesting when all of a sudden a movement can determine the schedule of the President of the United States. But Camp Casey from last summer, now we're having it again in August, and it's going to be the 16th of August through the 2nd of September. And guess what? For the first time since President George Bush has been president, he's not going to spend 5 weeks in Crawford, Texas, chopping wood and riding a bicycle. He now says he's going to be there, guess what? August 3rd through August 14th. So he doesn't want to see us on his doorstep, so he's going to be there a little earlier. We also were able to determine his Easter schedule. For the first time in 5 years, he did not spend Easter at Crawford because we had Camp Casey at Easter. So we are affecting the President of the United States by our protest activities of his government.
You most definitely are, and you can't imagine how much support you have around the country. I don't think sometimes you're in touch with it because you're so busy, so consumed with your extreme schedules these days. But we hear it here. We know what's going on, and I'm telling you, you guys are making an impact. You know, getting back to the topic of this Lebanese escalation of violence, the separation, their separate entities, ne'er the twain shall meet. Do you really believe that, Anne, that this is all individualized pockets of violence that are suddenly erupting across the Middle East?
Well, it's very fascinating to see what has happened when you have two Israeli soldiers that have been kidnapped, and then all of a sudden the extreme escalation, rather than talking, as you know, there have been negotiations between the factions of the Palestinians, whether it's Hezbollah, whether it's Hamas. There have been negotiations for a long time over taking of hostages. But I'll tell you, this what has happened now, and I don't condone either one. I don't condone the kidnapping of the Israelis. I don't condone the Hezbollah's using of missiles, and I certainly don't condone the Israelis coming in with such a heavy hand of retaliation for this. I quite honestly have not made up my mind whether I think it is a part of a larger scheme. But I'll tell you, I am so distressed about the response of the Bush administration, although one probably should not expect more. But it is very harmful for U.S. interests and for U.S. reputation for the United States to be standing by and essentially saying, go ahead, Israel, just keep going after them, keep going after them, and not lobbying for a ceasefire where the carnage can stop on both sides of it, because it does neither side any good at all to have this flare up again, the worst that's happened in over 20 years, and it's just set back the whole opportunity to have peace in the region by a long time, tragically.
And what are your concerns about Iran and Syria?
Sure. I mean, here you have Hezbollah that's been supplied by Iran, that's had supplies coming out of Syria, to see the southern part of Lebanon and taking such a beating. One of the theories is that the Iranians put Hezbollah up to doing this so that it would divert the world's attention from their nuclear power or nuclear enrichment program. But I'll tell you what, it's a difficult thing when you've got other powers in the region that are supporting one side, and then one side takes a pounding, and it really puts the security jeopardy of the region. Security is jeopardized in the region when all of this happens.
Well, all I know is that all of this violence that has erupted throughout these, I can't imagine that our country, especially after Condoleezza Rice to the trip to the Middle East, and the fact that she absolutely stated that the United States government was not going to pursue a ceasefire. For me, that spoke a lot. That said a lot. And the connections there have to, I mean, what would be invested in our allowing an escalation of violence in an area with an ally when we are so depleted in Iraq and in Afghanistan? To me, that said a lot.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I tell you, the whole point of, you know, the United States, which, you know, for many years has been doing, we've worked on some levels to try to create peace in the Middle East, to try to help that process along. During the Clinton administration, it moved as far as it's ever had, but certainly the Bush administration has, from the very beginning, would not step in at all to use our influence during the intifada that was going on back in 2002 and 2003. The Bush administration says, no ceasefire, go ahead, go do what you need to do, get rid of, quote, the terrorists. It is something that for the rest of the world, I think, is aghast that the United States, which has power in order to have, it has influence, refuses to use that and essentially just gives a carte blanche to go ahead and do what you want to do, just as they've given them their own selves the carte blanche to invade and occupy a country that did nothing to the United States, and that being Iraq. So it's
right.
Perfectly consistent with the Bush administration's policies, tragically.
That's the key. It is consistent with everything that we've seen since this administration has been in office. You know, Ann, I don't know if Medea is ready to be introduced onto the program.
She's not quite yet, but we do have a very, very interesting person. He's from Iraq. His name is Raya Gerard. We would like to have him offer his comments if you'd like.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Is he there with you?
Yes, he is. Uh-huh. He surely is. And I can put him on the phone right now.
Okay.
Absolutely. Wonderful.
Oh, thank you so much. It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Very fascinating woman.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello, Raya.
Raya?
Yes, this is Ra'ed.
Ahlan, Ra'ed. How are you?
I'm
fine, thank you. My name is Basma Farhat, and this is John Neal, and our board director, Carrie Minaj. People are listening to you over three different venues, Ra'ed. And are you Iraqi?
Yeah, I was born in Baghdad.
Wonderful, wonderful. What's happening in Baghdad, and what do the on-the-ground Iraqis say about what has happened to their country, what is happening in their government, and what their feelings are towards the Americans and the insurgency side?
Let me concentrate about what happened today, because what's happening in Iraq is a very long story that I don't think we can cover in, you know, long hours of discussion. What happened today is that the Iraqi prime minister betrayed Iraqi. He made everyone feel very disappointed during his visit to the U.S. because he was sent to the U.S. by his government carrying some very strong messages to be delivered to the U.S. government. And he came here and he just was intimidated by the Bush administration. And he either felt afraid and saying what he was supposed to say, or he said the opposite. The majority of Iraqis now, according to the latest poll, 87% of Iraqis are requesting a timetable for pulling out the troops. And many of the top official Iraqis, like the Iraqi president and vice president, the Speaker of the House, and the National Security Advisor, have requested a timetable for withdrawing the troops publicly. And al-Maliki is working on a reconciliation plan that should include a timetable for withdrawing the troops. But unfortunately, al-Maliki came here and surprised everyone by his demands for more troops and his demands for the troops to stay for a longer time. So it's a big disappointment for Iraqis, and today I was listening and hearing what Iraqis were saying and reading what local media were saying. And they were really disappointed because of Al-Maliki's visit to the army and his, you know, continuous thank you to what happened instead of condemning what's happening in Iraq. On the other hand, Iraq stood very strongly against the Israeli attack on Lebanon, and the Iraqi government condemned that attack and called it a criminal attack against the Lebanese people, and they sent $35 million to the Lebanese government in a time that Iraq needs every dollar. And al-Maliki comes here and he gets intimidated by the Congress and he doesn't even open his mouth to mention what's happening in Lebanon during his meeting. So I feel really disappointed because of this, and I feel that, it's shame on him that he betrayed the Iraqi people in this way, in a time that everyone was looking to him, as a political crossroad that he could have done something to change the situation.
And do you feel that this was an inadvertent episode? Do you think that Nouri al-Maliki, having fought for the rights of the Iraqi people through all of this, would come to the United States and be into? Could it be that his intention was to make a meek statement?
I can't support al-Maliki's politics along what he was doing on the long run, but at least I can support his Iraq reconciliation plan, a proposal for the Iraq reconciliation plan that he put together in the beginning of June. And in that reconciliation plan, he went to the public and he said all of these points there were 28 points that included pulling out the U.S. troops, giving an hand to Iraqis, asking for compensation to Iraqi victims and asking to stop all of the U.S. raids on Iraqi homes and towns. But after a couple of days when he was put under pressure by Khalil Zad, the U.S. ambassador in Iraq, it seems that he felt afraid or like they threatened him or something. So he started changing his words and he started, just changing his politics. So I can't see... And that's not very, very shocked of what he did today, because what happened today started actually in mid-June when he started losing his political vision and started to follow the Bush administration's demand.
Let me ask you, do you think that this is just for everybody's information? We are currently speaking with Ra'ed Jarar, who works within the Code Pink organization alongside and in solidarity with Medea Benjamin and the group from Code Pink and Global Exchange. Let me ask you, Ra'ed, is this not following in suit with all of the reactions from a majority of the Arab leaders, this milk and toast kind of response to these enormous escalations and violence in the Middle East?
Yeah, let me just correct something small. It's not very relevant. I don't work with the Code Pink. I work with Global Exchange and IPS.
I see.
I support the current fast, and I always got to support Code Pink's work.
Well,
what's happening is that you can't actually, see anymore. The Arab leaders are being put under enormous pressure by their people in the last weeks because of what's happening in Lebanon. So even if they were afraid or terrified because of the Bush administration's foreign policy, they still took some strong stand condemning the Israeli attack, asking for an immediate ceasefire, and in fact sending some money to Lebanon. Yesterday, Saudi Arabia sent $500 million to the Lebanese government, and they put another $1 billion in the Lebanese central bank to support the Lebanese economy. And the Egyptian and Jordanian and Saudi government have asked yesterday and today in the Rome conference for an immediate ceasefire. And, this is supported by Syria and Iran and Iraq and other countries. So, unlike what the U.S. the mainstream media is trying to give this impression that there is a big support for the U.S. U.S.-Israeli attack on Lebanon, there isn't any support even on the mainstream level. Even the corrupt dictatorships that are supported by the U.S. are afraid to support the Israeli attack on Lebanon because of the outrage of the Arab and Muslims in the Arab and Muslim world.
Which I think will be growing tremendously over the next period of time. It's profound, and it's a prolific and very disturbing escalation in brutality and power. And it's no more than the big guys flexing their muscles in the area. And I don't understand the complacency of the Iraqi people. I mean, the Iraqi and the Arab governments that are sitting back and watching this. And as I said, I believe that their responses to these to this episode, as well as the responses to what is the brutal occupation of Iraq, the Palestinian occupation, I'm just, you know, as an Arab American in this country, a Palestinian, I am disheartened by the lack of powerful, unified protest against this violence.
In fact, what's happening, on the other hand, is that the Israeli attack against Lebanon is uniting all of the region against the U.S. and Israeli, front against the U.S. and Israeli attacks and occupations in the region. So even from a right-wing neocon point of view, what Americans and Israelis are doing with their reckless policy by attacking Lebanon is actually uniting all of their enemies and getting so much public support to their enemies. So, I mean, it's just a very stupid and unproductive move by the Israeli army that don't know exactly where their limits are because they have so much militarized policy and they're trying to prove that they are the superpower in the region. But even from their point of view, what's happening is against their interests, and Hezbollah is gaining a huge, enormous support in the Arab world and in the Islamic world. And Iran and Syria are having a very strong front, and Saudi Arabia is even supporting Iran for the first time ever in the contemporary history. And Iraq is having a huge, huge reaction to what's happening in Lebanon. Last week, the biggest Shia militia in Baghdad had a big demonstration carrying both the Iraqi and Lebanese flags, and they wanted to go and fight with Hezbollah in southern Lebanon. And I don't know whether you are getting updates from Iraq, but there are big clashes between Shia militias and British and American troops over five provinces in the south now. And all of these things are caused by the Israeli attack on Lebanon. So, I mean, even if we drop down all of the international laws that are being, broken by the attack, even if we forgot about all of the humanitarian issues and all of the civilians that are being killed and all of the illegal moves that are being supported by the U.S. Implemented by the Israeli government, even from their point of view, they are doing things that are bad for them. These attacks are making the Israeli security even more vulnerable in the Middle East, and they're making the U.S. troops even more vulnerable in Iraq, and they're making everything even harder for the U.S. policy and for the Israeli policy. So, I mean, it's not that they are doing something good for their people or for their interests in the region. They're just a bunch of thugs who don't know where to stop. And this is what we are watching, and this is what's happening in the Middle East now, and this will cause a huge and more bigger reaction from the Arab and Muslim world, and this continues for another few weeks. We are expecting a bigger regional war to start.
Well, I know that for a fact that all of us have tremendous concerns about what's happening in the Middle East as Arabs, as Americans, as Europeans all over the world. Everybody is just stunned and astounded by, as you said, this onward and escalating march of thugs. We have, Ra'ed, do you have a couple of minutes to respond to a couple of our audience questions?
Yes, sir.
Great. And after the next two questions, we will go on a little break, and then we will hopefully we'll be able to contact Medea by that time. Our first question is coming from Zico. Zico, please come to the mic. Give us your name and give us where tell us where you're calling from, Zico. And please, Zico, make it brief. We have a lot to try to fit in over the next few minutes. Thank you.
Thank you. I would like to ask the captain, Anne. Am I going to ask Anne, the American who was in Iraq?
No, Zico. Anne is not. Anne is not.
A question. No, okay. Right. No, sorry. I have no question for her. I have a question for that American young lady. Thank you.
Okay. Our next guest on our audience participant is Salam. Salam, come to the mic. Give us your name, where you're calling from, and a brief question for Raed. Anne is not on the connection right now. Raed is on. Raed Jarrad is speaking with you.
Yeah, okay. I'm calling from East Africa. Actually, I'm not calling. I'm sitting behind a PC, and I am having a mic to the phone, but to power talk. I think you understand that. But my question is, and I'm hoping for any American answering me this. This is my question. Why are American politics really shocked and American citizens shocked when they find the Muslims don't like them since they condone everything that Israel does in Gaza Strip, suppressing them, destroying their homes, making their life impossible, and not supporting what's happening in Lebanon? Why are they shocked? I'd like to have an answer for that, please. Thank you very much.
I don't know that if you heard everything that Salam said.
I would be thankful if you can summarize it another time.
Yes, he wants to know why Americans and the American government are shocked when Muslims don't like what's happening to the people in Palestine under the brutal occupation of the Israeli government.
I don't know whether they are really shocked or not, but I can say that the U.S. foreign policy, unfortunately, sometimes takes big steps towards directions that are against the U.S. interest. It's against the U.S. Interest as a country and as a people and as a government. So many of what happens in the Middle East happens because of the influence of the Israeli government there. And the Israeli government doesn't actually seem to care about the interest of the U.S. I mean, from my point of view, as a taxpayer in the U.S., I don't want to see my money being spent on bombs to be sent to Israel and kill people and make people hate the U.S. even more and put our country here in the U.S. in a more vulnerable position. I don't think that this is in the strategy of the U.S. It should be in the strategy of the U.S. I don't think it's in the interest of the U.S. or in the U.S. people. But, I mean, you can see that the U.S. foreign policy is being, pulled by foreigners like the Israeli government, and they don't really care about us. They don't care about the U.S., what's going to happen to the U.S. They don't care about our money. They don't care about anything. They just care about their regional agenda. They want to use the U.S. to destroy their enemies in the region, and they don't care about the consequences of what will happen to the U.S. So maybe this is a good answer for your question, and that's why the U.S. government would be like, we didn't mean to attack Muslims, we didn't mean to attack Arabs, because they don't actually have this on their agenda, but they are being used to attack Muslims and Arabs, and their blind support to the Israeli policy in the region is causing this anti-American sentiment in the Arab and Muslim world to grow even more.
Just like they didn't mean to bomb the United Nations outpost for over 6 hours today, Raed. Our next audience participant is Sands to See. Please come to the mic, Sands to See. Give us your name, where you're calling from, and your brief question for Raed. Sands, are you with us? Sands?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay.
I don't know. The name Raed Jarrad is very familiar to me. And I want to ask you this.
I hope you don't mind. Did you attend the Khalil Al-Mil Islamiyya in Amman? I've known a fellow with the same name. I mean, he sounds even like him. I thought that might be it. The question I want to ask you, and I hope you have a comment on this, I've seen articles, and I stress all the internet constantly to Arab media, and I'm seeing the photos of Hassan Nasrallah, the leader of Hezbollah, and his resistance, and they in Egypt, they're carrying out the demonstration, carrying banners showing the face of Hassan Nasrallah next to President Nasser. There is a mass appeal for popular resistance against the United States and foreign powers and their domination and the suppression of Arab sovereignty on their land. I'm hearing people talking about killing not all Arabs, and which implies that they are killing, they want to kill some Arabs. And if that is, you know, can be, you know, accepted or tolerated. The Arab sovereignty of their national land means that they have to run these affairs. If there is a criminal entities or criminal act, that should be left to the Arab regime to deal with it, and a mutual international, as it is the mutual international treaty. I'm off the mic.
Well, I don't know that that was necessarily a question, Rod. I believe that that was a statement.
It was a question.
Yes.
I mean, I think it was a question. And let me comment on that statement slash question. I think that, in fact, what the U.S. is doing is not just increasing the anti-American sentiment in the Arab and Muslim world. Because I'll give you a funny example. I mean, it's not very funny, it's sad, but I mean, it's just like to see what's happening in the rest of the world. Yesterday, demonstrators in Greece had a big demonstration against the Israeli attack on Lebanon, the Israeli-American attack on Lebanon. And they pulled down a statue of Truman. And it's like, it's a very anti-American move to do, because Truman does not really represent these principles that are happening in the U.S. Foreign policy now. But you can see that this anti-American sentiment is reaching to other parts of the world, even to Europe. So the demonstration that happened today in Cairo is not the first. The demonstration that happened in Baghdad a couple of days ago, people were actually chanting slogans supporting Nasrallah and Muqtada al-Sadr in the same time. And they were going in the streets carrying both Iraqi and Lebanese flags. So this will take us back to the point that Hezbollah was, if Israel was actually doing their job in neutralizing or destroying Hezbollah, as they are claiming that now, they are saying we are attacking Lebanon and bombing the hell out of Lebanon and the hell out of Lebanese civilians and Lebanese infrastructure to attack Hezbollah and neutralize them. Hezbollah was actually being neutralized during the last 5 years because of domestic pressure against them to disarm and leave their deassemble their militias. And the Israeli move turned them from a position where they were under attack by their own people to a position that everyone across the Muslim world is supporting them now. I was looking at a poll by Al Jazeera the other day, a poll that 200,000 people took a part of, 190,000 people took a part of, and more than 93% of the people who took a part of this are supporting Hezbollah's move, and they think that Hezbollah is a legitimate resistance. So I think that what's happening is that even if we want to believe the U.S.-Israeli theory about what's happening now as an attack against Hezbollah alone, and it's not attack against Lebanon as a people, as a country, they are actually doing Hezbollah a favor, because Hezbollah, you know, had never had such a support in the Arab world during the last, not years, maybe even decades. Maybe they're reaching now to their peak of support by the Arab world. I think they should send some cards of thank you to the Israeli embassy afterwards.
Well, I think we all agree with that. Thank you very much. Medea Benjamin, I believe, is with us at the moment. Medea, can you hear us?
Yes, hi.
Hi, Medea. This is Basma Farhat, my co-host John Neal. I want to thank you. You've offered us the opportunity of an incredible insight here tonight with Anne Wright and Ra'ed Jarrah. Medea?
At this point in tonight's broadcast, we totally lost our audio feed from our guest, from Medea Benjamin. We do apologize for that. It's something that just kind of snuck up on us. We weren't able to officially close the program as usual. We will work as hard as we can to get Medea Benjamin back so we can hear what happened with her today and what she's been up to. She was very busy, as you could tell, on tonight's program. They were having a meeting of some sort based on her arrest today. We will do our best to get her back as soon as possible. Next week's program will feature Ray McGovern, a 27-year veteran of the CIA and a current activist against some of the policies of the Bush administration concerning foreign policy mostly. We will get to that with Ray McGovern next week at 8 o'clock, next Wednesday at 8 o'clock, right here on The People Speak. At this point in time, I wanted to, on behalf of Basma Farhat and Carrie Minaj, our technical director, and myself, Jonathan Neal, I want to say thank you for coming this evening, and we will look for you again next week at 8 o'clock on The People Speak, because when the people speak, we do make a difference.
One bright sunny morning, in the shadow of the sea, by the relief of the past, I saw my people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering how this land was made for you and me. This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, redwood forest to the Gulf Stream water. Yeah, this land was made for you and me.